pharmacy is my new sport. I'm an athlete. Basketball is my sport. Track is my sport. Now pharmacy is my new favorite sport. Whenever I go in and I perform as an intern, like, I'm in my head, like, I'm the best intern this company has. Therapy is my writing. The more I wrote, the better I felt. All it took for us was to just tap the tire of the 18-wheeler, and we just went flying. The car flipped about 5 to 7 times.
No.
Like, as we were flipping, I'm just thinking, it's going to be over soon. And then I had a separated shoulder.
You went out with a separated shoulder?
I took my sling off and all, because I didn't want people asking me questions. Like, it assured me, like, hey, like, I'm supposed to be here for real. And that just gave me more assurance. Like, I'm supposed to be here. I have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not, like, the first time God saved my life, believe it or not.
Welcome to the Mad Scientist Podcast, powered by minorities who are astonishingly driven scientists, where we aim to serve everyone pursuing a career in STEM and teach them that they are graced to dominate STEM.
Jesus, I just want to say thank you so much for bringing Benji and I together. God, I pray that through this podcast interview that your name is glorified. God, I pray that you give both Benji and I the right words to say and the right things to do to help impact your people. God, I pray that this just isn't about us, but God, it helps bring more people to your kingdom. And God, I pray that as Benji goes to pharmacy school, that God, you continue to guide him, keep him, and allow him to have a smooth transition and know that you are always with him. So, Lord, in the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Mad Scientist Podcast. So, this is a podcast that aims to serve everybody pursuing a career in STEM and teach them that they are graced to dominate STEM. And this podcast is mainly for those who want to build a relationship with God while pursuing a career in science, technology, engineering, and math. So on this podcast, we have amazing individuals to help tell their testimony and talk about their journey of pursuing a career in STEM and how they have had their relationship with God be built as they've gone throughout this journey. So with me, I have Mr. Benjamin Ebay.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And thanks for coming. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself. And I'll be calling him Benji because that's how I know him. So Benji, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm from Sumter, South Carolina. I'm a Nigerian, I guess you could say native. Both of my parents are Nigerian. I'm the first Nigerian male, or only Nigerian male. How can I say this? Hold on, let me back it up.
Okay.
I'm the first American born in my family.
Wow.
Yeah. So only son my own father had. I got 4 sisters, unfortunately.
Don't say unfortunately.
went to university, or we can even back up before that. Went to Sumter High School, graduated in 2018. Went to university from 2018 to 2022. Got my bachelor's in exercise science,
mm-hmm.
minored in biology. From there, I went to University of South Carolina School of Pharmacy, and that's where I am currently.
All right. So before we dive deep into where you are now, let's talk about what was your upbringing like? Like, how was growing up? I mean, you said you're the first Nigerian male to be born in America.
Mm-hmm.
So how was that like? How was your family life like? And also, how was God with you throughout this process?
Definitely. So growing up was definitely different. I mean, everybody has their own story. But me being the only boy, my sisters kind of saw it as, like, I had it easy,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't know the half. Like, it was just so much pressure on me just because I'm the only boy. I'm the only boy, then I'm the only person who can carry on the last name.
Mm-hmm.
And I just come from a background where, you know, my dad wanted all of us to become doctors.
Okay.
He wanted everybody to become medical doctors at that, but that's not something that I wanted to do. I'll have doctor, you know, before my name, but just not, you know, MD, I would say. But my dad was very strict on us. Had a separated home. My mom lived in Columbia for some time, then she moved to North Carolina. and she moved further away to New Jersey, and then now she's in Philadelphia, so she's a little closer. Mm-hmm. Started off seeing her maybe every other week when she was in Columbia, but as she got further away, it got harder and harder, and it actually got to a point where I saw her like just once a year. So that was pretty hard. My mom kind of like, I guess, being forced to raise us from afar and not really be too involved in our life, because our dad already wasn't involved in our lives, even though we grew up with him, mm-hmm. Which is kind of weird because he was just buried in work all the time. It was just work in the morning. He worked at Morse College, still works at Morse College. Then he would come home and handle his online classes. So there was really no like father-son interaction. There was no playing. There was no like, oh, hey, son, let me teach you this. Like, I had to learn a lot of stuff on my own, believe it or not. So just me being the little brother, my sisters basically raised me. They gave me the mindset that I have now. And fortunately, it's kind of flipped now where I act as like the main male figure in their life, because there's a lot of things that we couldn't open up to our dad about. Like, still to this day, our dad doesn't really know like who we are as people, as individuals, because he just grew up sheltering us from things. So we kind of just kept it like that. Like, me having tattoos, me having my ears pierced, like,
was that a no-no?
The worst sin I could ever do. That was the worst thing I could ever do.
Parents don't know, like, that's like this compared to other stuff that you could do.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're just like, no, don't cut your body open. No,
I used to have an afro. Uh-huh. Hated that. Like, and I was always well groomed. Like, it wasn't like I had like twists or like dreads in my head. Like, I can understand that, but just had a nice little afro, picked it out every day, and he did not care for it. So it was just like small things like that where I just felt like I couldn't really express myself to my dad how I wanted to. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really know much about the podcast I have now. He doesn't know that I rap now. He doesn't care about my fraternity, really. Like, he doesn't, if it's not school, he doesn't care about it.
You told him about like the rapping, the music, and the other stuff that you do, so the podcast, but it's just,
they just kind of shrug it off.
Okay.
And so that's how I grew up. I kind of grew up, hate is a strong word, but I did used to say I hated my dad back in the day, just because of that. And just hearing stories of like, you know, how it was with him and my mom before she left. Mm-hmm. But then you kind of grow up and you just, you know, mature. Thank God that I started maturing. And you kind of realize, like, okay, like, why is he the father he is now? Like, why is he lacking what he's lacking right now? Mm-hmm. You kind of, that forces you to kind of go back in his history and like, okay, well, he didn't have a father growing up. His father passed away at a young age. And then his mother has been gone for over 10 years now. So he never really learned how to be a father. And then being a single parent of three at that, I'm sure that was hard on top of teaching 24/7. So, you know, you don't want to give your parents a pass, but you
give them grace.
Yeah, give them grace and you understand. You know, so.
Yeah. And I know one thing we hear, I'm used to hearing about, is young boys not having a father in their life, mm-hmm. and the dad, the mom being the one in the home.
Yeah.
She may be the one working all the time and not being there, and the dad being away. But in your case, it seems like it's flipped. Your mom was away, your dad was there.
Yeah.
So how did that affect you, your relationships growing up, how you saw women, how you were
I'm glad you asked groomed, that. Yeah. You know? I'm glad you asked that, because how I see women, I felt like that's big right there. Like, me having, my mom was away. My mom was my first love. Mm-hmm. But then having her.
Sorry, what age were you?
I was, when she moved away, I was maybe, when they got a divorce, I was like 2-3.
Okay, so.
Like, when they were having those problems, I was like 2-3 years old. But then when she like moved away to where like, we weren't seeing her often, I was maybe about around 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. Cause she was still in Columbia around that age. But after that, once I turned like 10, that's when we stopped seeing her for some time. So growing up with two sisters in the house, and now I have two more sisters because my mom remarried, mm-hmm. I believe that I understand women more than like most guys do.
Okay.
Just because like just growing up, being a little brother, like I understand how y'all are in certain phases, you know. My dad kind of taught me, just hearing stories, he taught me how not to treat women, essentially. Not saying that my dad was abusive, but he just taught me just like how not to talk to women. Because even how he spoke to my sisters, I kind of learned, like, you know, girls, they take, how can I say this? Like, it hits hard, like, what their dad says to them, or like, what, like, maybe you got an older brother, like, it hits harder. Mm-hmm. Or even, I mean, maybe, like, people, like, have more value in what their mom's saying and everything. But, like, what a father says to their daughter, like, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't want to bring your daughter down.
That's true.
Like, I've had instances where, like, my dad told me, like, at a young age, like, I was a disappointment to him. Like, that's nothing to be telling your son. So he was just kind of teaching me, like, what not to say to women.
What made it a disappointment?
Just little things. Like, I could be, I was bad. I was bad. I act out a lot. I acted out a lot when I was younger. But it was just little things. Like, I could be getting in trouble in school for, like, dumb stuff. Like, just talking in class. Like, that was me. Like, I got in trouble a lot for talking in class. Like,
and now look what you do. Like, now you got your podcast.
Okay. Exactly, like.
So you needed that. That helped you. Like, who you are.
You know, you get done with your work early. Like, what else are you supposed to do?
Right.
You know, so definitely I talked in class. I was the class clown. He hated that. I mean, that was my best skill, like, back in the day. Like, I was a clown.
Mm-hmm.
I loved making people laugh. Like, mm-hmm. that was a skill. But he did not like that. So, you know, stuff like that. And then mm-hmm. you can't blow that out of proportion to where you tell your son, oh, you're a disappointment. He's a disappointment to you just because he got in trouble in middle school, high school. That's yeah. nothing to say. So, you know, that kind of takes a toll on your mental if you're mm-hmm. not strong enough for it. Like, if you don't have God in your life who ultimately leads you through your woes, your struggles, like, that can take a toll on your mental. Like, I could have really believed, hey, man, like, I'm a disappointment to my dad. Like, I can never make it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's supposed to be my role model. He's the only male role model I have in my life right now. Like, and I'm a disappointment to him. But, you know, I didn't really see it as that. I kind of just shrugged it off. That kind of made me develop the mindset I have now, where, like, I don't really care about what people say about me mm-hmm. often. You know, you're always going to have, like, the haters in your life. You're always going to have people who see, like, that bright light and they try to dim it.
Mm-hmm.
But you just gotta look past it and just keep doing what you're doing, honestly.
Did you have God in your life growing up?
Yeah, so I grew up in a church. I went to the same church for 20, really all my life. When I was 1, 2, it's crazy, I have crazy memory. I've been in the same church for 23 years, really. I'm 23 years old right now.
Mm-hmm.
So every Sunday, church, went to Bible study. It's always the same routine. Go to Bible study, and then we would go to the big church. But basically, it's just, you know, worship
mm-hmm.
and learn right there. I got baptized when I was 10 years old.
That was young.
Yeah, young, but like I understood. Like, I didn't want to be the one who, like, because my dad was kind of forcing it upon us. But I wanted to kind of understand, like, what it really meant, you know?
Yeah.
So before I got baptized, I watched the movie The Passion of Christ.
Mm.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one.
Yeah.
But just seeing all of that at that age, like, I was like, wow. Like, I cried watching.
You see what Jesus really did that's for us.
Yes, that's the only movie I've watched and I cried.
But nah, it's good, though.
It is good.
To see that one man would really get on the cross and sacrifice himself for some dumb people like us, you know, some selfish people like us. It's like, I would never do that, you know?
So, big facts. Yeah. So, like, I cried, and then I just took the time, maybe a couple weeks later. I remember April 4th, 2010. That's when I got baptized. From there, I was still a bad kid. I feel like I might have gotten worse after that.
What's your definition of bad?
Like, me just getting in trouble, me being mischievous. But I think that was mainly because, like, I didn't get that attention from my dad.
Yeah.
So I was just going to school and just having the time of my life, no care in the world. I was still a smart kid, still did my work. But then, like, I just did things that got me into trouble. I wasn't stealing or anything, or, you know, like, cussing my teacher out or stuff like that. I was never disrespectful. It was just, like, me being a class clown at church. I used to fight at church, believe it or not. I used to get into fights.
Why at church?
See, because they thought that they could mess with me at church. And I went to an all-white church.
Oh, okay.
So they thought they could mess around with me, but I had to tell them, like, nah, like, this is not going to happen here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here for the same reason you are.
Right.
So Wednesday nights, I would get into it with the same guy. I was like my rival. But then I remember the last time I ever fought in church, or it wasn't really a fight. It was mainly like an altercation, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I was of age at this point. I was like early high school, and this guy, like, he tapped me on my shoulder. I'm in the front. I always sat in the front row in church. Tapped me on my shoulder to get me to look behind him, and didn't say nothing. You know how we used to be back in the day.
Yeah.
I laughed, like, you know, okay, cool.
Yeah, haha.
Like, that was funny. But then he did it again. And I was like,
okay. All right, now you're playing too much.
Then he did it again. I was like, all right now. And you know, all right now,
that's
fighting words. Like, it's a warning. And then he did it again. And I was like, all right, chill out. He did it a fifth time. And I backhanded him, like, in the middle of the service. Like, I just turned around and just, and his gun went flying out of his mouth. Peers all around him laughing and, like, left it at that. Like, I'm surprised that nobody saw that happen, like, as far as, like, a grown-up.
Yeah.
So I would have been out of there. But that was, like, the last time I ever got into something at church.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I think I started calming down. I really didn't start calming down, like, behavior-wise until, like, mid-high school, probably, like, 10th, 11th grade. That's when I started chilling. I was like, you know what? Let's cut this funny stuff out, you know? Just a little bit. I'm still funny now, but let's just calm it down and start focusing on, like, other things. So, like, so people can start taking you serious,
right?
Because that was a challenge I had back in the day. I felt like, you know, I had aspirations, but I wanted people to take me serious and not see me as, like, the class clown all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not only walk through the young age, and you wanted to be taken seriously. How were you entering into college? So how was the college
reach? Yeah. So, like, I was of a different mindset. Like, then I was in the prime of my athleticism. I was an athlete. So I had
ran track.
So I was doing basketball in high school, but then I kind of lost the love for it just because of, like, how they were doing things at Sumter High.
Mm-hmm.
But they were trying to keep, like, 18 to 20 people on one roster.
Okay.
And that's not what you're supposed to be doing. So I left track, I left basketball, went to track my senior year of high school, and I won two championships that season. I won district championship, regional championship.
All right.
Lost at state on qualifier. Went on to Winthrop, walked on, and I was promised, hey, you know, you come jump this, then we'll give you a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
So I was determined. I wanted to get that number that coach told me, like, that first meet. Like, I was trying to tell her, like, hey, I'm here. Like, this is what I do. I was never as confident of an athlete in basketball than I was in track.
Okay.
Because track was more of, like, an individual sport. So, like, you really got to showcase, like, who you were as an athlete individually versus, like, having to rely on, like, a team for you to win a game.
Right.
So I wanted to just, I remember the day before my first meet in practice, like, I jumped, it had to be the furthest I've ever jumped. Like, I jumped what she wanted me to jump that day. I still have a video of it and everything. And then next day at that meet, I was the first person to go, first attempt and everything. And I came down on my leg wrong. I did triple jump. Okay. So you got to jump off the same leg twice and then switch legs and then get to the pit. I landed on my leg wrong, and I ended up like hyperextending my knee like in that process, and like I twisted my ankle with it too.
All at the same time.
Same time, and like I just started rolling and tumbling. And at that moment, I felt like, oh man, like my career is done. Like I thought I tore my ACL at that time. And then my ankle as well was on fire. I ended up fracturing my ankle, and I like had a partial tear in my patella tendon. Mm-hmm. So you would think, you know, hey, I'm going to be out for the season. It's safe to say I'm out for the season.
Yeah.
Wrong. I was rushed. Of course, I'm a freshman, so I don't have that mature mindset yet of like, hey, I need to take my time coming back. I still have that mindset of, hey, like, I got to get back so I can get that, you know, 45, 46 that my coach wanted me to get so I can get this scholarship. So I ended up being in a boot for 2 weeks over Christmas break, came back, and the coach already wanted me to start practicing again.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. I just got out of a boot. So I'm practicing with it's like I have a robotic leg. I'm practicing with an ankle brace on and a knee brace on. And she just wants me to just be doing sprints. And then I want to say within 2 months later, I was jumping again. And I was not myself at all. Like, I could not get back off the ground.
Wow.
So I definitely just learning from that experience. If I was mature enough mentally, I would have just asked to be like redshirted like that whole season, just sit out and just rest. Because I don't know how I did it, but there's two seasons in track. So you have the indoor season and outdoor season. I got hurt during the indoor season.
Okay.
Outdoor season, I was trash because like I was jumping hurt, like not supposed to be doing that. Especially how hurt I was.
Yeah.
Spent that summer working my tail off. Somehow, through my injuries, I got faster.
Mm.
And like I started paying attention to the little things. Like ankle stability, knee stability. Like my balance in the air, my form, all of that stuff. So I came back a better athlete that second year. But you can tell I was still healing from those injuries. Because I never really let myself like just fully rest.
Yeah.
I never just sat down because I still wanted to get that number. Came at the next year, still not really jumping how I should jump, but I was sprinting now. So I was a faster sprinter. I was never a sprinter before I came to Winthrop. So then from there, that's when we were kind of having problems with the coach. And this is what kind of transformed my mentality. Like, this was like a key moment in my college, you know, career, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were having problems with the coach and nobody was speaking up about it. They were saying that in previous years, oh, they signed a petition to kind of get her out of there and everything.
Right.
Cool, but like, that's just a petition. Like, did you go and talk to somebody? So I don't like when there's a lot of complaining and nothing's being done about it. So that was kind of creating like a toxic environment for the team. Like, I didn't like being around that complaining all the time. So, and she was doing a lot of stuff. Like, there was one time, like, I have evidence, like, it was pouring down rain, and yet we were still practicing outside. And that day I told her, like, I'm not practicing. I put my foot down, told her I'm not practicing. She told me, okay. I went in my car. So after that, that's when I went to the athletic director. And I met with the athletic director and the assistant athletic director. I told them what was going on. I went in there. I didn't tell them that, like, oh, I want this coach fired, yada, yada, yada. Like, I wasn't doing all that. I was just telling them what was going on. And I told them, like, hey, maybe she needs help. We just need some more help. Because she was a coach who was coaching the sprinters, the jumpers, hurdlers, everybody. She was just running around.
So she was spread thin?
Yeah. So I give her props. Like, she was raising everybody on the team, essentially. Mm-hmm. Basically a single parent.
Yeah.
Having to raise everybody.
All those kids.
But then, like, of course, like, her flaws was just bleeding into, you know, certain groups.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody wasn't really, like, getting to their highest potential. Everybody was really just getting hurt because of how things were set up all the time. So I was just talking to the AD, telling them, like, you know, we just need some changes, that's all. And that was a good step. They told me that they respected how I approached it, and like they were glad that I didn't come in there just like whining and complaining about her. Mm-hmm. So they said they'll look into it. From there, I thought about coming back the next season, but then like me and her relationship, it was just too toxic at that point.
Right.
So that's when I was kind of deciding, like, okay, I may just, you know, step away from the team now. I may just end track altogether, because like that was me just looking out for everybody else at that point. Because I saw how toxic me and her relationship was. And I was like, you know what? I don't want... And I know how people viewed me on that team. If me and her are toxic with each other, I didn't want everybody else being toxic with her.
Yeah.
So I just decided to leave. That's when COVID actually hit.
Okay.
So that spring, I was planning to go crazy. Because at that point, I felt like I was better. Like, my knee was better. My ankle was better. I was starting to feel really good. But then COVID came, you know, it just messed up that last season for me.
Yeah.
So I decided not to come back. And then, we went home that year in, March?
2020.
By the time we came back in August, I wasn't on the team. I felt fine. Like, all my injuries were gone.
Yeah.
So during that time, I was becoming an alpha as well, entering my fraternity. So my dean, Jalil, he was like a mentor for me. And he was kind of opening my eyes. It's like, I like to say, like, I had mace in my eyes to, like, my potential. Like, I kind of saw it, but I didn't really know what I could do with myself at that time. But he kind of opened my eyes. He wiped my eyes for me. And I was able to see, like, man, like, I don't need this. I don't need this person. Like, I ended up dropping track. I ended up dropping my girlfriend at that time. And I came back that junior year just like a completely different person.
Mm-hmm.
To where like a lot of people, even my teammates, it's like they didn't really recognize me. Cut my hair. I was just on a different, like, tapped into a different chamber almost. You know, mm-hmm. Like, it's like they were afraid to approach me. I don't know if it was because, oh, I hadn't. Alpha powers or whatever, you know, you get letters and people just feel like they can't talk to you anymore. That's a different story. But yeah, that period right there is like 2020, that transformed me into like who I am today, essentially. Moved on from there. It was just school. What was that, junior year? I don't think anything significant happened junior year, but as far as like, well, my mental health. That's mm-hmm. when I started, like, learning about my mental health a lot more. Towards the end of that fall semester, I was experiencing a lot of anxiety. And I didn't...
In 2020?
2020, yeah. And I didn't really know what anxiety, like, was at that time mm-hmm. or how it felt. I just felt, like, a lot of pressure in my chest.
Okay.
And, like, I'm at the gym, so I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'm going too hard. So I ended up going to the doctor, and the doctor was like, you know, you're fine, like, you just have anxiety. Like, maybe you have some uncertainties in your life right now. And then that is when I was kind of thinking about, you know, breaking up with my ex. And that was a relationship that, like, I was building for 3 years at that time. So, you know, it's hard to let stuff like that go.
Heck yeah.
So from there, I had a talk with her. And, of course, she didn't want to believe in all of that stuff. So I was kind of like, felt like I was stuck in that situation because I still wasn't like fully, how can I say this? Like, I was tapping into that chamber, but I didn't fully get in that chamber yet to where I was like, man, like, no, like, this is what I want to do. Like, we're done. I was still wanted to give it a chance. I gave her a chance and, like, still wasn't, you know, living up to what she should be living up to, I would say. Or
that
even
definitely does add a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So, relationships will...
Man,
thank you.
I was going through
a whole nother level.
Yeah,
they will.
And like, she brought out a lot of. I feel like that relationship, it became toxic, and it started creating flaws in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was like, it was one time. I don't do this. You know, I don't normally do this now, y'all. Like I was yelling at her. Like, it was. There was a situation. And, like, you know, like I said,
you're not a yeller. You don't seem like the type to
And I'm an open book, so I'll share this story with y'all. It was this one time, this is 2021 now. I got my first tattoo right here. It's my first tattoo, fresh out the chair. Came home, and I'm with her, and then her roommate and her roommate's mom is there. Mm-hmm. And the roommate's mom, I've never met her a day in my life.
Okay.
And she came up to me. I told her, what's up? I should have told her, hey, my name is Benji. So that is where I went wrong. Mm-hmm. Told her, what's up?
The mom?
Yeah. Told the mom, what's up? So that is where I went wrong. But her response did not have to be what her response was, considering that she is an adult.
Okay.
So, you know, she corrected me, and I told her, like, hey, my name is Benji. She looked at my tattoo, and she smacked it.
Oh, so she hit you?
Yeah. Doesn't know me now. So, like, that, you know, I could have pressed charges on her right there if I wanted to. Like, you don't know me, you're hit, you putting your hands on me. But, you know.
This is our first interaction?
First interaction.
She just hit you.
Yeah. So, it's like, you know, hey, I'll let it slide. You know, that's me. I like to just, well, let's turn the other cheek, you know, let it slide. Then we went in the living room, and then that's when I saw that they were drinking. So, suddenly, they just were drunk. Two shots or whatever, mm-hmm. already drunk. And she just, the mom started talking trash to me.
The mom was drinking with y'all.
With them, yeah. So I won't reveal kind of what she was saying, like, because I don't want to say, like, names and stuff or, like, give any of the details of the situation that she was referring to. But she started calling me out of my name. And, like, that was something that I did not deserve. And that's when my ex, like, she just sat there. And, like, just let me take all of that. Like, wasn't defending me, wasn't sticking up for me. So that led to me leaving, walking out of the room, excusing myself. And that's what led to me yelling at her when she called me. Like, I exploded. Like, I don't know if you know Tommy Ray. Mm-hmm. He saw all of that. And he was, like, shocked. He was shocked on, like, how I was yelling. And he saw me yell like that again at my dad that same summer. I'm like, yo, what is going on? Like, I'm exploding on people right now. Mm-hmm. And I've never, as much as me and my dad have been through, I've never raised my voice at him, ever. Mm-hmm. We've disagreed plenty of times, but I've never done that. So that's when, like I said, I just wanted to start paying attention to my mental health. I let my ex go. I even stepped away from my dad. Like, I never go home. Like, when I left Sumter, I just didn't like going home. One, it's an hour and 53 minutes away. And I didn't see that hour and 53 minutes. Like, I just didn't see it worth it, honestly, from what I had waiting for me at home. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of stayed away from my dad as much as I could. So that way I felt like that brought more, like, I guess, value back into our relationship, to where, like, we're not arguing every time we see each other. Right. It's like a, man, son, I missed you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's more of that now, instead of, like, you're used to me, so now you're just taking me for granted. So I'm glad I kind of did something like that. Moving into 2022, or at the end of 2021, I felt like I was at my highest. Like, I felt like, you know, I was done with the anxiety. I'm having fun now. I'm single for the first time in college, and I'm just vibing. Like, I'm having a heck of a time in my fraternity, and then a traumatic experience happens again with my car accident. Mm-hmm. So I had gotten in a car accident in October of 2021. I wasn't driving. My friend was driving my car. We were coming back from Columbia late at night, and I just woke up to, like, just swerving in the car. And I remember us, like, sliding down the road sideways.
Okay.
Kind of gaining conscious, like, waking up still. And then I see us coming towards an 18-wheeler.
No.
And then I'm just thinking, I'm like, dang, like, if we touch this 18-wheeler, like, something's going to happen. All it took for us was to just tap the tire of the 18-wheeler. And we just went flying.
You spit or you...
We flew. Like, we... Phew. And... The car
This
flipped.
Was on a.
This was on I-77. literally 10 minutes from our apartment.
In Rock Hill. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember exit 73, and that's where it was.
Yeah.
So we started flying, and car flipped about 5 to 7 times.
No way.
We had people, Quantisha and Sydney, they were falling behind us. So I can only imagine. Yeah, they saw all of that. So I can only imagine how they were feeling at that time. So the whole time I'm in the car, I'm just thinking like, okay, like this, it's gonna be over soon. Like that's just the faith I had. I felt like that faith saved me. That faith saved me.
You talked about that in your song.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what exactly. Saying that. Like you feel like the Holy Spirit saved you.
Yeah, that faith saved me. I felt like if I doubted, like, oh my gosh, we're gonna die, then we probably would have died.
In that moment, what?
That was like the calmest I felt.
You felt calm.
Like I felt like I held the bar in my own car, and I
y'all
was
had
like,
your seatbelts on.
Seatbelts on and everything, and I was like, okay, it's gonna be like as we were flipping, I'm just thinking it's gonna be over soon. Mm-hmm. Like, I never felt like that was it for us. And then we stopped. But then from there, everything just started, was just fast. Like, it felt as if, like, as soon as we got out the car, ambulance and police, everybody was there already.
How did you land?
We landed upright. Mm. So I didn't get out of my end. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I may be able to send you the picture. So we landed upright, and I got out. The driver's side. So Alonzo, he asked me like, "You good?" I'm like, "Yeah, you good?" He's like, "Yeah." So he just got out the car.
I followed him. Too?
Mm-hmm.
And you landed upright on what?
We flipped into like the, I guess like the median, the grass, mm-hmm. but we flipped on the opposite side. So like.
So you flipped from this side of the road to this side.
Yeah. So we were already on the left lane. And then, you know, you have grass and then you have the oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
So in the grass, you have grass for your side and grass for the oncoming traffic side.
Yeah.
We flip onto the grass or the oncoming traffic side. That's how far.
Over railing?
Yeah, over railing. Any further, I mean, literally, like, if we drove for 3 more seconds before we started flipping, we probably would have flipped off the bridge.
Jesus.
Yeah. There's so many ways that situation could have went, but yes. Like literally God was like held us in his arms like the entire time.
Yeah.
So from there we went, got rushed to the hospital. That was like a 7-8 hour visit, which felt like 2 hours, no lie. Mm-hmm. Like that's how fast time was moving. Went home that same day or that morning, and my first thought was like, let's go turn up. Like we just left that day. We went to SC State. We came down here. So actually, it's crazy. This is the first time I've been back down here
since that time.
Day. Yeah,
since 2021.
2021.
Wow.
We came down
here. State is right there.
Yeah, we came to State for that homecoming. Left State, went to USC because it was happening at the same time. Went to a night party, and then USC was gonna have their tailgate that next day. So when we got out of the hospital, we was like, we still going to this tailgate. I'm not staying here so I can be replaying this accident in my head over and over.
So you needed something to take your mind off of that?
Yep. So, went to the tailgate, definitely got drunk, had a time of my life, came back. It didn't hit me. Everything didn't hit me until, like, I said, like a week or two later.
Because you were numbing yourself.
Yeah. I was in my room, and I just found myself like just thinking about it, and where I messed up, where it's like I was like I want to remember what happened to me for some reason. Mm-hmm. So cause like I said, everything was moving fast, and then at that point, like it's like I remember everything, I felt everything, cause it's like I felt my body still felt weird at that time from all that like twisting and turning we were doing, and it's like I just saw everything, and then I had an anxiety attack instantly. It was like, man, like.
What do they treat you for when you're in the hospital?
It's crazy. Like, I felt like they didn't do their job at the hospital.
They didn't. Because you said you had a busted eye.
I had a big knot on my head. Like, this whole head, like, this whole side of my head was just swollen. And then I had a separated shoulder. They gave me.
And then the next.
Next day. I had a separated shoulder.
You went out with a separated shoulder?
I took my sling off and all because I didn't want people asking me questions. Yeah.
What?
And the sling they gave me was
I was only two.
Gave me a flimsy sling, like, you know those blue masks we used to wear for COVID? For COVID? That's how it looked. Just like a big mask. And I had to go out the next day and get like a nice like sling.
Oh my goodness.
I took that sling off. I was like, I can't have people see me like this. Like, they could already see my eye. And like, if you had
I'm about to say your eye and then you still had the, you're not on your head?
I wore a hat. I wore a hat. I had the eye. So if you knew.
You had shades on?
Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you knew me and like you saw, like, cause I posted it on my Snap that morning. If you saw, it was like, oh damn, like he just survived an accident.
I'm like, why are you here?
Yeah. So a lot of people were asking me that, like, why are you here? I'm like, hey, like, thank God for another day. Literally, that's exactly how I felt. Thank God for another day. Like, from there, like, not to say that I wasn't valuing my days, but that really, like, brought a new meaning to my life. Like, mm-hmm. it assured me, like, hey, like, I'm supposed to be here for real. Not that I doubted it, but it just gave me more assurance. Like, I'm supposed to be here. I have a purpose. Mm-hmm. Because that's not, like, the first time God saved my life, believe it or not.
Wow.
So, from there, you know, I was kind of just healing from that instance. I missed school for 2 weeks. Missed work for 2 weeks, so I just came back behind, and this was like middle of the semester, so it was the worst time to miss school.
And so you did go to therapy.
Therapy is my writing. So when I talk about in my album going to therapy, because I don't want to take the psych route.
Right. I thought you meant.
Yeah, actually therapy, right? Me going to therapy, I tapped into myself spiritually more, but me actually writing, because the doctor told me, she was like, she didn't know that I wrote.
Okay.
But she was like, try writing things down and then coming back in later and seeing if it made sense.
Okay.
And at that time, I wasn't writing my raps anymore, so I took a break, like a 2-year break at that. And then from that time, that's when I was like, you know what, like, let me start writing again. So from there, I wrote. Like, that first song on my album, that's the first song I wrote after my car accident. And the more I wrote, the better I felt. Tommy, essentially, was my therapist. I would go to Tommy because Tommy sits on the fence with everything. Like, he's not really like he's not biased, I would say. So Tommy, thank God for Tommy. Thank God for Alonzo as well. But Tommy was my therapist. Essentially through that whole time, like, when I wasn't on my notepad, I would go to Tommy and like I would just tell him about really just my day or just anything that I was like going through at that time. And like, Tommy's a great person to talk to.
He is a great person to talk to.
So that was my therapy. I never got like a, you know, a actual therapist. I feel like I just didn't need to. So then I was still healing. I would say that healing process was like, took maybe like a year and a half. Like, it took me all the way into the anniversary, which was last October, made a year of like since it happened to me. And that's when I realized I had seasonal anxiety. So hopefully
it was always for that, around the time of the accident?
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, I'm waiting this year to see if it's going to happen again. But the thing about it is, like, when I had those instances, like I said, I was just tapping in spiritually. So now I know, like, okay, if I'm anxious during this time, I'm expecting it. I know how to just embrace it. And just, like, if I got to go through it, I got to go through it. It shouldn't bring me down. It shouldn't, you know, alter my performance in the classroom, things of that nature, because like, I've been through it before. I just know, like, I just gotta, you know, trust God with it, pray. And when I give things to God, like, I literally give it to Him and I leave it alone. Mm-hmm. I don't really like worrying, because I feel like, you know, why have faith if why, I might be tripping my words up, but like, why have faith if you're gonna just turn around and worry?
And worry about it. How do you?
Why have faith if you're gonna just turn around and worry?
And worry about it. How do you pull on God when you have those anxious moments?
Just when I'm anxious, the first thing I do is try to catch my breath. That's like the first thing.
Is it an attack? Or is it, you have shortness of breath?
Mm-hmm. So I have two types of anxiety. So I have like attacks to where like it just hits you, like you get lightheaded and you just feel like you just can't control your breathing, like you're just breathing real fast. Mm-hmm. And then I have another type of anxiety. This is the one I hate more than the first type, because the attacks, I've saw, like, I can get over that quick. Mm-hmm. But this type is more like it's prolonged. Like I have shortness of breath for a period of days, to where like I can't.
Quick question: yeah. Was this after the accident? Yeah.
So
it was just after the accident.
After the accident, I've never experienced that. After the accident, that's the first time it happened. Like I had the anxiety attack, but from there, I had anxiety where I had to go back to the hospital. My blood pressure, like my systolic was 168. And I'm just chilling. But why can't I breathe right now? Like, I felt like my breathing capacity should be here, but like it was here. Like, mm-hmm. I can only breathe but so much. So I had to go back to the hospital for that. So like having shortness of breath for a long period of time, it still happens sometimes. But I just know, like, okay, I know what this is. Like, this isn't something I've never felt before. So, you know, you pray.
Was the accident, you said October?
Mm-hmm. I can even feel like that at work sometimes. Because I put pressure on myself at work, being in the pharmacy. Like, I always, pharmacy is my new sport. Like, I'm an athlete. Basketball is my sport. Track was my sport. Now pharmacy is my new favorite sport.
Okay.
So whenever I go in and I perform as an intern, like I'm in my head, like I'm the best intern this company has. That's literally what I'm telling myself. Mm-hmm. And I perform my actions day to day, like as if I'm a pharmacist. Like my job is to alleviate pressure from the pharmacist, the actual pharmacist that day.
Yeah.
I'm doing things that they should be doing, but I'm doing it now so I can learn and to take pressure off of them too.
Right.
But sometimes I put too much pressure on myself in that, to where like, oh man, like my chest is getting heavy. I need to calm down. I need to like just relax. So now what I do now, I do things like take supplements like ashwagandha that'll help with stress. I take stuff like L-theanine that'll also help with focus and just like calm yourself down as well. I like the L-theanine. The L-theanine is more instant.
Okay.
Ashwagandha is something that you can take like at the beginning of the day and you're in a good mood for the rest of the day. But if you're feeling real stressed out or if you got to study, just take pop a pair of L-theanine and you'll be straight.
Okay. So we're going to dive into your pharmacy journey.
Okay.
But before we do that, I just feel like I want to tell you, because it's August right now.
Mm-hmm.
And October is in, 2 months?
Yep.
So, I know for a fact, you said you pray, and then you take your stuff, but have you ever tried praying and fasting? You ever coupled those two together?
I prayed and fast once, but it was for a different situation.
Okay.
I've never prayed and fast over my anxiety, but
I think you should.
You think I should try something like that?
I honestly will shout it from the mountaintops. Every time somebody says something like, you should try fasting. You should try fasting. I'm telling you, my life was forever changed through prayer and fasting, coupling those two together,
mm-hmm.
and then pulling out scriptures while you fast. You can choose how your time frame, but knowing that you said your accident was in October and then it's August right now, you got time to prepare. And then on your fast, just start coming against the spirit of anxiety and saying, I command you to come out in the name of Jesus Christ, and then start telling your mind, the word of the Lord says, be anxious for nothing.
Okay.
And then in moments where you feel anxious, like it's your job, start calling those out. Like, even in my job, anxious. I shall be anxious for nothing.
Okay.
And then even on the day or around the day of the accident, start saying to God, this is something, you saved my life. Like, you knew that in that moment that I was going to be in an accident. Yeah, I didn't know, but you knew. Mm-hmm. And you're the type of guy that doesn't want me to be anxious for anything. So therefore I shouldn't be feeling shortness of breath. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be feeling like this. So
I would encourage you to leading up to that, whatever
you feel led to do. But since that you said it's in October,
I'm gonna try that.
And then even in those times, start pulling out scripture and start speaking it over your mind, speaking it over your car. If you still get anxious, getting in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Your breathing.
Facts. Okay.
Breathing. Hear the word of the Lord. You shall regulate. You know.
Yeah.
You shall hear. Because I'm telling you, and people. I've had an anxiety attack before, and it came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime I do feel like anxious or anything, I have to remind myself, like, no, body, hear the word of the Lord.
Yeah.
You shall be anxious for nothing, you know? Because the things that we're worrying about, it's like God already has that handled. And so,
thanks. You know? I like that. And it's like, that's what's made me feel better day to day, just the spirit of the Lord. Like, it almost makes me feel invincible.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
And like, it, that's like a feeling that you want to be careful about. Like, of course, like, I'm not saying I can go jump off a building right now and survive. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm invincible to where, in instances of like the obstacles that I have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
So like leading into like, you know, pharmacy.
Yeah.
Right now, I just finished my first year of pharmacy. And definitely was challenging. The first semester went way better than the second semester. The last semester, I had an instance where the teacher.
Oh, wait. Tell the people mm-hmm. what pharmacy school you went into.
Okay,
you,
yeah.
You're at.
I can back up. So, why pharmacy anyway?
Yeah.
Started my interest in pharmacy around late elementary school, early middle school. I saw my uncle was a pharmacist, and I gained interest in like wanting to like discover like new medicine,
mm-hmm.
or even like just create new medicine, like create new cures for things like cancer, stuff like that, AIDS.
Okay.
But then I kind of shied away from that because I was just hearing like, you know, like they might try to do something to me, you know, the smarter I get. So I was like, let me not go that route, or at least not right now. So I gained more interest in the business aspect of pharmacy. And now it's more so of, I want to be a, not just a pharmacist, but I want to be a director of pharmacy operations.
Okay.
And that just involves me being in charge or overseeing the performance of like multiple stores in like a district.
Like a Walgreens, CVS?
Or like
bigger?
Just with whatever company I'm in.
Oh, okay.
And then even from there, I have aspirations of like, I want to be able to have pull or a voice on the board of pharmacy.
Okay.
Or the FDA, where stuff is regulated, things of that nature. And then even from there, I want to have my own pharmacy school, because me seeing, going through pharmacy school now, I see all the flaws that's there,
right,
that exist. And I want to be able to correct those flaws. So now I'm at USC, College of Pharmacy here in Columbia. Started my first year. First semester wasn't bad, you know, just like a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of getting used to studying, because undergrad, I did not study at all. Undergrad was like, it came to me.
Even in exercise science, you had chemistry and other stuff, right?
Chemistry was the only class I studied in. But that's.
You had to take biology?
I took a couple biology classes, took micro, I took. Cell biology, I had to study.
I'm about to say cell biology was hard.
I just refused to study, because it was like that. A part of me was intellectually lazy, I was saying.
Okay.
So I guess I would pick and choose which classes I would study for. But most of the time, things just came natural to me,
mm-hmm.
to where I knew enough. But pharmacy, you know, you can't do that. Like, you got to know everything. You got to understand everything, because they will literally ask you a question, give you an answer, four answer choices that literally look the same. It's just one word is different.
Yeah.
So you have to know your stuff. It almost as if like you have to know stuff verbatim almost. So, you know, I went through the first semester, pretty cool. But at the end of that semester, I saw that I had got a D in one of my classes. And I'm like, hold on now. Because a D is, you need a C to pass everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, D.
Because pharmacy school is different than just undergrad. You got
to
have.
You have to have a 70 or above.
Okay.
And like, there is no like, oh, hey, I got a D, let me SU, or like...
Yeah, you can't do any of those pass and fail type things.
I got a D, let me just retake it next semester. Nah,
yeah.
Like, you have to petition, go through a whole process when you want to retake a class, and I can get into that. But what had happened was I submitted an assignment. Now, I'll take a minute to hold myself accountable. I did miss. This is an easy class. I just had to submit 10 assignments in.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I missed two assignments, and that was already 16 points right there.
Right.
And to this day, I don't know how I missed those assignments, but I take responsibility for that. It's cool. But I still definitely could have passed the class with missing those two assignments, because I passed all those other assignments.
Mm-hmm.
Submitted this last assignment that was worth 18 points.
Mm-hmm.
I got a 6 out of 18. I'm like, man, heck no. Like, no way I got a 6 out of 18. What's going on? So I immediately thought it's probably a format issue, because the teacher said she only accepts Word documents. If it's not in a Word document, she automatically deducts points.
Right.
So that's what my mind went to at first. But then I saw mine was saved as a Word document. I'm like, So I went to one of my classmates. I was like, you know, hey, what did you make on this assignment? He told me he made an A. I'm like, let me see your answers.
Yeah.
Compare my answers. Same answers. And I'm like, hold on. What's going on? Emailed the teacher in December, middle of December, and she did not reach out to me until the end of January. In between that time, I reached out to two separate deans, just so like they were aware of what was going on and
right.
how long I was waiting. And they were telling me, you know, hey, like just, you know, reach out to the, you know, they say reach out to the head of the department.
Mm-hmm.
They basically have to pull over the professor. In reality, they don't. You know, that's something that I figured out. In reality, they really don't.
Mm-hmm.
Reached out to him, and he got back to me. It was like, okay, like I'll reach out to her. So the teacher finally reached out to me, and we met. I was real professional. You know, I don't go in there showing my behind.
Mm-hmm.
So
that definitely ain't gonna get you
anywhere. So. Went in there real professional, asked her, you know, told her what was going on, and she was prepared. I mean, she had my document printed out for me already and everything. Because I just told her, hey, I just have some questions.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I worded my email. I said, I have some questions on the assignment. So, like, if I have to retake this class, I want to see what I got wrong. That's
right.
how I worded my email. She didn't know. I didn't tell her that, hey, like, I think there's an error with my document. I didn't say that. But she printed out my document. And then when I got in there, I told her, hey, like, this is what's going on. She showed me. She says, this is what Blackboard showed me.
Mm-hmm.
The document of 18 questions, 4 questions were completely gone from the document. So that brings it down to 14. And then another 4 questions were just blank. And I'm like, okay, so how does something like that happen?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna just.
And you were the only student this happened to.
Apparently, it's happened before, and
oh, okay.
the same outcome happened to those students.
Wow.
So, you know, it's like nobody's gonna delete work from their document and turn it in.
Mm-hmm.
I understand maybe if you left something blank, that's more understandable because maybe you just didn't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
But for something to be blank, that's outrageous. And I'm of the mindset of like, hey, you know, if I'm a teacher and I see that something. It's gone. I'm going to email the student and
yeah.
say, like, hey, like, something was wrong with your document. Can you please resubmit the document?
Yeah.
No email, nothing. And she's like, I can only accept what Blackboard gives me, straight up. I went in there looking for a solution.
Right.
And she's like, I can only accept what Blackboard gives me. And, like, she was just leaving it at that, like, no discussion, nothing. And then I'll never forget that feeling. I'm like, yo, like, there's no way this is happening. I'm really about to retake, have to retake this class.
Because of a simple little mistake
from Blackboard. And it's not like I was even blaming her. I was telling her, like, yo, like, Blackboard messed up my assignment.
Yeah.
And that's more money that I got to come out of my pocket. And that ultimately put a stain on my mental for the next semester. Because, remember, she didn't reach out to me until the end of January.
So the semester started already.
I mean, I'm taking my first test next week after we meet. My mind's all messed up. I'm not studying how I need to be studying.
Right.
I didn't do well on all those first wave of tests. And when I went to the dean, back to the dean afterwards, they were behaving as if like they knew the outcome already. Like, you know, there's nothing that we can do. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm like, so there's nothing that y'all can do. But y'all are the deans, so the deans don't have power over teachers now.
Even knowing that the stuff was deleted on Blackboard, they still were saying.
And I had evidence. Nothing we can do. I had evidence. I recorded evidence of when the document was created, when it was last modified, and how it was saved. Like, I recorded all of that. That way, they didn't think like I was trying to pull a fast one on it.
Yeah.
Recorded all of that. Presented it to the deans, presented it to the teacher. Nothing. So I stopped caring that second semester. I was like, man, bump all of this. I lost my love for it. And I was cheating the process. Mm-hmm. So I just wasn't studying how I was supposed to. Thinking like, you know what, I'm going to just do bare minimum. I'm not giving this college my all. I'm not giving this process my all. Because if I'm going to be putting in work just for my work not to count, like, why even try? Yeah. So I was stuck in that loop. And I ended up failing 3 classes. And, of course, failing is you don't get a C. I didn't want people thinking that, like, I had Fs in those classes. Like, I had Ds in the classes. And really close to the C range as well. So failed 3 classes. And then I also, on top of that, failed my lab. Because my lab, you need a... Of course, you need a 70 to pass the class, but it's different. You need an 80 on the final exam to pass the class.
And that's just the lab.
So,
is it kind of like undergrad lab? You got many assignments in lab?
Yeah.
Lab, okay.
So we had quizzes in our lab. We had assignments and quizzes. I don't know why that lab was worth one credit hour when it should be like 5. We're in there for 3 hours. We take a quiz while we're in that lab, and we turn in 2 separate assignments every week. Like, we have the most assignments, and we also have 2 quizzes before we get to that lab. But somehow it was worth one credit.
I mean, undergrad is like that too.
Yeah,
you do a lot in that lab for 1 credit.
So I had an 88, cruising with an 88 whole semester.
So that's good.
But then when it got to the final exam, my mind's all messed up. We had 3 finals. I got to the drug final where we had to know the top 300 drugs. I made a 78.5 on that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't meet the 80 mark. They give you a second chance. So I'm like, okay, like, no way, I can't retake this lab.
Yeah.
So they sent out an email. And for some reason, they sent out an email with 2 separate dates in it. So I think that's why I got confused. I'm here thinking my retake test is on a Wednesday when it was really on a Tuesday.
Okay.
So that Tuesday of the test, went home, chilling, like, you know, hey, it's a normal day. But then I get an email, like, hey, Benny, like, you didn't show up for your test. I'm concerned, like, what's going on? I'm like, I didn't show up for my test. What do you mean? My test is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Check the email, and it says, like, oh, test was today. I'm like, no way. So I missed my test. Got there, she let me take it.
Oh, that's
like,
good.
It was good, but like, I'm rushing and everything.
I
drove back home, but then I had to turn around. I'm scrambling, rushing. I rushed back to the school, and when I got there, like, that's probably like the first time I doubted myself. Like, yeah, this is probably not gonna go my way, because like, I just wasn't of the mindset like, hey, I have a test. I wasn't in test taking mode.
Yeah.
So I got there. I did worse than I did the first time. And they said they did everything they could to kind of get me extra points. Like, they were trying to look out for me.
Oh, that's good.
But, you know, it just didn't go my way. So, I'm kind of glad that whole semester happened how it happened. Because that kind of taught me not to dwell on, like, you know, things that happen. Because if I dwell on that one instance, then it can affect and mess up everything for me. Like, I worked hard to get to this point, and I can't let one loss, you know, just allow me to throw everything away. And even just with me, like, cheating the process, now I have a new mindset of, like, I really want to know everything in there. Like, me just working in a pharmacy, I see how important it is to kind of know, like, little details about things. Like, everybody is going to have different talents. Like, it's a lot of people who might just have one talent, or who's cool with just doing one thing in their life. But others, they want to do everything that they've ever dreamed of. I'm one of those people. So as long as you have that balance, as long as you have priorities, pharmacy will always be the number one priority. Mm-hmm. I'll say that right now. And then, of course, like, you know, other things. That I have my podcast. I have music. I have aspirations on even becoming an entrepreneur while I'm in pharmacy school. Mm-hmm. I want to open up a second stream of income while I'm in pharmacy school to go ahead and start paying off the loans. You know? It's crazy. Like, I've been getting questions from patients, and, like, the answers are, like, from things that I've been learning in class this first year. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy that I've been able to answer them. So it's like, you know what? Let me really dive into this. Let me really take my time with this and enjoy the process. Like, enjoy learning things. Stop being intellectually lazy and, like, wanting to, like, get more knowledge.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it was a blessing in disguise. So I don't mind repeating my year. I know I'm not stopping. I don't see myself as a failure, or I don't see myself as, like, I lost value, even though my dad has already made a comment about that, kind of like I lost value. But I mean,
put that in the trash pile. Yeah,
I allow him to be my hater. You know what I'm saying? I allow my dad to be my hater. Like, I don't really care about what anybody else says, but my dad is my biggest critic. So,
but you're gonna be a doctor,
of course.
So
you know,
he'll be satisfied.
He has to learn. One, it's not our time; it's God's timing.
Yeah.
So, it just wasn't meant for me to finish in 2026. I'm 2027 now. Mm-hmm. If I finished in 2026, who says that, like, you know, I would have been the pharmacist that I would be now finishing in 2027? Meaning, I probably wouldn't have taken all that material seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I keep going through 2026 and I can't even pass my NAPLEX, my pharmacy board exam, because I didn't take the material seriously when I should have.
Right.
So now I might be in a situation where I don't have to study as hard when it's finally time to take that, you know, that NAPLEX exam. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just a different outlook on life. Just, you know, being positive with everything through the lows, I would say.
Yeah. So how are you going to do it differently?
Well,
going in, what's your mindset now? Because it's August.
Yeah. So for starters, I do want to engage more with my class,
because
I felt like I even cheated them. Like, I would go in there and, like, I would talk to some people, like, my role, but I never really engaged with the class. And that's just not who I am. Like, I told myself when I got to Columbia, hey, I need to rebrand myself here.
Yeah.
Because only people in Rock Hill, like, I may be popular in Rock Hill, but they don't know me in Columbia. So me even having my podcast, I wanted to keep that going as well. I might need new members on my podcast, so just wanted to rebrand myself. I didn't do the best I could with that. I wasn't the leader that I am with that class either. Mm-hmm. So with this class, I do plan on, if they don't watch my testimony on YouTube, I do plan on testifying to them.
Yeah.
Just to kind of let them know, like, hey, like, it happens. You know, the things, life is going to keep happening no matter what.
Right.
You just got to keep going, keep trusting the process, and just be like a brighter light for them, I would say. And this semester, I'm only taking just that repeat class and maybe a work study, and maybe getting out of the way, like, another elective that I might have to take in the future. And then next semester, I'll be retaking like all those sciences that I failed. It'll really be next semester the challenge versus this semester. Mm-hmm. But just going through next semester, like I'm actually wanting to establish goals now. Like I was never one. I always was like, you know, hey, I don't care about GPA anymore. You know, like it's pass or fail, you know. Mm-hmm. But now I find myself creating goals like, hey, it's not a bad thing to want to make the dean's list. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing to want to have all A's in your classes. Like, so that's what I'm striving for this year. Like, I got a chip on my shoulder for real.
It's like you're coming back. All right, so you think you're still gonna be doing, all right, so not only does Benji, is he gonna be in pharmacy school, but he does music as well. So tell them a little bit about your music. And you talked about it earlier when you saying that was your form of therapy.
Yeah.
So what's music been like for you? Are you still gonna continue to do it while you're in pharmacy school?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's only the beginning. Like, I feel like it's a new beginning. Mm-hmm. I started writing raps. I was 16 years old, started writing raps. Like some of the, it's crazy, like maybe a song or two on the album I wrote back when I was in high school. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Which ones were they?
Beanie Badass. And it's like certain lines and certain raps. Let me see. Bondage I wrote back in 2020. Mm-hmm. So Beanie Badass I wrote back in like bits and pieces of it is from like 2017, 2019, and I think 2020. But most of those raps were written back in 2020. Maybe a couple of them written this year, actually. But yeah, like, actually being able to put that album out meant, like, so much to me. Because just starting off with just writing and not wanting to, like, being insecure about sharing my work to others. Mm-hmm. And being insecure about, like, how I sounded when I rapped. Not knowing, like, hey, I just need to practice. I just needed to practice my delivery and just kind of figure out the style that I wanted to have. And I figured out, like, I have my own style and I don't need to stick with that style all the time. Like, music should be about, like, how it makes you feel, how a certain song makes you feel. Like, you write it, you might be writing your feelings down on a pad, but ultimately when you make that song, like, it should make you feel a certain way. Mm-hmm. So I finally learned that. I took the time to invest in at-home studio, because I figured, like, hey, like, if I'm waiting or if I'm wanting, like, other people to produce my music for me or record for me, like, that's going to take up a lot of my money. So
yeah.
I just made an investment, made an at-home studio back in January. Took about 3 months to kind of learn, like, how to mix and master my stuff.
January of this year?
This year, yeah.
Okay.
So I literally learned how to mix, master, record myself from January all the way until early June. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was kind of like pretty much polishing up everything on the album. So from here, you know, it's up from here. It's only the beginning. I do have aspirations on, 5 is, you know, a good number for me. So
5?
I do want to have at least, I do want to say that, like, I've had at least 5 projects that I put out there in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can definitely achieve that. It doesn't have to be during pharmacy school, that whole 5, but just in my lifetime. And, you know, I've had people, like, this is where, like, and I can even give some encouraging words to people, because, like, everybody is going to have different talents. Like, it's a lot of people who might just have one talent, or who's cool with just doing one thing in their life, but others, like, they want to do everything that they've ever dreamed of.
I'm
one of those people. So as long as you have that balance, as long as you have priorities, pharmacy will always be the number one priority.
Thank you for listening to the Mad Scientist Podcast. Remember, we are graced to dominate STEM.
I pray that you get it, even if I can't get it with you. I pray to God you never let the little things in life distract you from the bigger picture. Everybody in the city to me like a distant cousin, brother, little sister. I see myself in the young ones when I look in their eyes and feel like a mirror.